Welcome back to Freeze All Motor Functions, a podcast for Westworld newcomers and veterans alike that doesn't sound like anything to me. Me equals Jared Borslow, and I'm here with Ross Bolin.
Hello, Jared. It's great to be with you here today.
And here, that Ross is referring to, is producer Micah's pool house. Right, Ross?
Yes, it is. We're working remotely for at least 3 weeks.
We're in between offices. Yes.
Our new office is being built out.
It is going to be an unbelievable location to go to and work.
So until then, we're homeless, and we're literally sitting in someone's pool house that Micah lives in, so this is my life now.
It is. We're like a traveling sideshow of podcasters coming to you live from Austin, Texas. Beautiful Austin, Texas. Ross, you love Austin?
Yes, I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. It is my home.
Are you selling your home? Do you want to turn this into like a real
estate? What is this show about?
Do you want to turn this into a real estate podcast?
We're talking Westworld here. This isn't interview me time.
Okay, well, let's get back to Westworld then. I want to start the show off by thanking the listeners of this show because your support for the show has been incredible. Thank you so much for listening and sharing the podcast with friends. It's really been up on our listen count lately.
We're really doing it.
We're doing it. If you have a friend you want caught up on Westworld before season two so you guys can watch together and have a phenomenal spring, share our podcast with them, and we can all be a big family of podcasting people and podcast listeners.
Everybody knows at least one person who's not in on this show yet who needs to be. Bring them in. Bring them into the fold.
We'll say hi to them.
There's not that much time left.
There's really not.
April 22nd is rapidly approaching.
Every day that goes by is another day closer to season two of Westworld.
And death.
Oh, wow, yeah. So you need to either get in on Westworld before season two or before you die. Either way, every day you spend not doing it is a day wasted.
That's your risk, you know? You're gambling with your life.
If we're all about to die, why are we even doing anything? Why aren't we all just engaging in every vice that we love every single day?
That's what Nietzsche asked.
How's he doing?
Oh, he's long dead. He was a philosopher.
I wonder if in the end...
I also made that up. I have no idea if he asked that. Well, but he was a philosopher.
Was he?
I know he said dark stuff. It seems like something he would have said.
I bet you Ford is going to quote Nietzsche at some point.
Perhaps.
Maybe he already has.
Nietzsche.
Another thing, our Instagram following has tripled in size over the last week. And that's, again, thanks to the listeners.
From 1 to 3.
No, it was from like 300 to 900-ish.
Tight.
That was dope. We appreciate you. If you want to follow along, we're posting some amazing content that's related to where we are in our watch through at Freeze All Motor Functions on Instagram. Right now, we're currently coming to you on Grand X Labs, the experimental podcast feed from our parent company, Grand X Media, that will be hosting Freeze All Motor Functions for the time being before we launch into our own feed. Subscribe there, rate and review if you want. I'm not going to make you, but if you like what you're listening to and you want to just let us know, it'll make my ego feel good. Stroke me, daddy.
Dude, what?
Sorry. My bad.
What's wrong with you?
So how the show works, if this is the first time listening, go back and listen to our episodes 1, 2, and 3 recaps.
What kind of idiot would jump into season 1, episode 4 for the first podcast they listen to?
I don't know. I really don't know. But you can. I would go back and do that. That would be weird to do. I mean, if any listens, a good listen for us. You know.
Yeah, you need to go back and listen to season 1, episode 1. That's where you start.
Yeah.
You know? You don't watch episode 4 as the first thing in a new TV show. That would be silly.
I could see somebody doing that and thinking they were being like a renegade and it was a good idea, but it would not be a good idea.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't want those people around me if you're that stupid.
So if you want Ross to like you, and you do because Ross is a big name these days, Ross Bolin.
What does that even mean, Jared?
If you want Ross to like you, go back and listen to episode one.
You know what I love about this podcast is how much Westworld we've talked in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah. I don't think it's been 10 minutes, but yeah. It's been 5 minutes.
Whatever.
There we go.
Let's fucking do this, Jared.
Okay. Well,
before
we do that, I have some big announcements. Did I ruin the mic there, Micah? Yeah, I did it. Okay, good. Big announcements. Yesterday, I posted an Instagram story on our Instagram at Freeze All Motor Functions asking listeners to roast my notably terrible entertainment center setup. And we had some responses that I'll dish out right now. At Waffles Hill said, "Dude, where's your wall mount? Do you have a wall mount, Ross?"
Yes.
Am I a poor person for not having a wall mount?
Yes.
Okay. At Boy Sky called my setup the College Drug Dealer Collection by Craigslist.
That's good. That
was
that
might
accurate.
That might be my favorite one. At NWForester76. Well, at least we know Jared doesn't live with his mom. She would have dusted. It was very dusty.
Yeah, if you haven't seen this photo, you need to see it. It's unbelievable. The man has inexplicably has a TV just sitting on a table in the middle of a room. There's like wires going to the wall. It's mayhem.
It can only be described as a rat's nest.
Mayhem, as Hector would put it.
Another guy called me out for dust at @_Jake_Rose. Pretty much said it was the dustiest TV stand he's ever seen. And then last but not least, at @JinjaNinja6885. He said, that doesn't look like anything to me. No, but really, it doesn't look like anything anyone would call an entertainment center.
That's a winner. That's the winner right there.
So thanks for doing that. Follow along at Freezel Motor Functions on Instagram to engage in more stuff like that. Also, second to last announcement. We have a name for our listeners. Ross, you want to explain this one?
Guests.
If we're the hosts.
We are hosts in fact and in fiction. And they'd only make, like, it makes sense. The listeners are guests.
So there we go. That's, we said that we weren't going to, you know, have you guys send them in, but.
Yeah, we didn't force it. It just happened.
So if you listen to Freezel Motor Functions, you are a guest. I hope you enjoy the moniker.
That's what we call our listenership from here on out.
And maybe the most important announcement of this week, aside from that, we have a new hotline number finally.
We really did it.
We did it. It's not, I'm not even going to say the old number. It's not that one anymore. Our new hotline number, put it in your phone right now. Get your contacts out. Add contact. 888-6-FREEZE.
Do it.
That's a great number. It's super easy to remember because our podcast is called Freeze All Motor Functions.
It's time to freeze. That's my Mr. Freeze impersonation from Batman Forever, I believe.
Is that a quote he would say?
Have you never seen the YouTube video that's just the fast supercut of Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze saying the stupidest shit in the world?
It's time to freeze. Oh my God, it's incredible. Well, okay, we can start saying that. If you want to get on our hotline, it's time to freeze. Call 888-6-FREEZE and you'll get on, maybe, if what you said is good and we like it and not bad. Right, Ross?
That is correct, Jared.
We have a long show today, so we're going to play a few hotline calls. Maybe it was two. I don't remember how many I sent to you, Micah. And then we're going to get into it. So here is the first call.
Hey, this is Kevin from the Philadelphia area. Regarding your Westworld podcast, I think it would be tight if Micah would whisper, "Remember," you know, like he used to do with Dragon, because on your podcast, I don't think he says anything. Like, is he even there? All he does is break fucking shelves. So, Micah, get to work. Thanks.
That would be good. Let me explain something. If you're not an Oysters, Clams, and Cockles listener, that call didn't mean anything to you. Ha! But yeah, on my Game of Thrones show, Micah often whispers Dragon. And yes, in Westworld, as we know, it happened again in this episode, there is a voice from somewhere that says, "Remember."
You know what? Micah, here we go. Do it.
"Remember." There you go. It was magical. It was worth it. But it probably, he doesn't have a microphone on our show. And for good reason. He doesn't watch Westworld. So
he has no idea what's going on.
Until he has a reason to whisper "Remember" repeatedly, maybe we make that a code at some point. For now, nah. That was it. That's all you get. One. Everybody gets one.
But I hope you enjoyed it. Next call.
It's for the Freeze All Motor Functions podcast. I got two things. One, how do you think that they prevent guests from killing each other? When William's getting those guns, she clearly says you can't kill anyone you're not supposed to. So that makes sense. Maybe the guns don't work on other guests. But when that host comes up and Logan just stabs his hand, clearly knows it's a host because he's been there before. What if there was just some random other guest? Does stabbing still work? They have these pretty good knives. Like, how do they prevent that? I want to know about that. What do you think? And maybe a new hotline number, 1-800-THE-MAZE. All right, let me know what you think.
Well, we already have a new hotline number.
Thank you for the suggestion, though. It will be ignored. To answer your question, it is a great question, because what's to prevent the guests, or let's say not even stabbing.
Yeah.
What's to keep me from coming up and kicking you right in the balls? Or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, what keeps me from attacking you guest to guest?
I truly do not know.
Because we haven't seen any guest-on-guest violence of any kind.
We did see in this episode the man in black threaten that guy who came up and said he admired him.
Yeah, but that's not guest-on-guest violence.
No, but
that's
it was
verbal,
a threat.
That's verbal threat.
And because the man in black knows everything about the park, he knows that he can slit the guy's throat. So we know that there's nothing preventing him from doing it, aside from, I assume, U.S. law.
See, I don't necessarily believe that, because the man in black says a lot of things just to say them. I don't think him saying that he was going to slit that guy's throat is indicative of his ability to. Surely there's something preventing him.
U.S. law. The laws of this land that we live in is the only thing I can think of that would prevent you from slitting somebody's
throat.
What if you
couldn't tell a guest from a host?
Maybe you sign. We know that they have a very, very big vetting process. Maybe you sign something in there saying, like, I don't know.
What if I'm walking through Westworld and I can't tell that you're a guest, and I don't like your face, and I decide to shoot it off. Then they're like, "Oh, dude, you killed a human. That was a human being. You're going to prison." There's some type of system for this.
There is, and maybe we'll find out about it later. But I think that the thing that would keep you from doing it to somebody you knew was a guest would be the law. But yeah, I don't know how you can tell if I just want to slit some guy's throat just because I feel like I'm in Westworld and you're encouraged.
Which happens all the time.
You're encouraged to do that. I don't know how I'd know.
And there's no real point in wasting your thoughts or breath trying to figure shit like this out, to be honest, because as complicated as this park is, as this alternate reality is, there's going to be questions like that go unanswered, at least for some time. You know what I mean? Like, we're not going to have all the answers. Nobody does. I don't even think the showrunners have all the answers. It's a complex situation. Mm-hmm. Just try to enjoy yourself.
Yeah. And maybe we'll figure it out someday if they tell us.
Maybe someday we'll figure it out.
Is that it, Micah? That's it. Two calls. If you want to get in on next week's hotline, 888-6- freeze. It's time to freeze. And now it's time to freeze all motor functions with our episode 4 recap.
If you could stop being such a dork, I would love it.
I cannot. I just spent an entire Sunday watching. I actually dreamed about Westworld last night because I watched it all day.
You're in too deep.
I am. I am in too deep.
Well, let's do it. Episode 4. Season 1, episode 4.
Episode 4. Dissonance theory.
Dissonance theory. Which has been mentioned before, correct? Has that been mentioned within an episode?
I don't know. I think the idea of dissonance has, but not dissonance theory itself.
Okay.
According to Google.com, cognitive dissonance theory says there is a tendency for individuals to seek consistency among their cognitions. When there is an inconsistency between attitudes or behaviors, then something must change to eliminate the dissonance. Intern Garrett, our content and formatting intern.
Garrett.
He says that dissonance can be referring to either Maeve or Dolores, who are both experiencing attitudes and behaviors inconsistent with their pre-programmed lives and are seeking to eliminate this dissonance through self-reflection and a questioning of reality.
Damn, Garrett, that's deep.
Well, I paraphrased what he wrote, but he had the idea, and I kind of just put my own little spin on it. I didn't want to.
Are you saying you deserve some credit, or that you ruined Garrett's otherwise genius thought?
I think that behind every great intern is an even greater employee. And as my boss, I hope you agree with that.
Well, first of all, I'm not your boss, but I was, I wouldn't agree with that.
I mean, I am your subordinate.
You are not, sir.
Really?
Check an org chart one time.
Micah, can I fire Ross then?
I think you might be able to at this point.
Okay, that's really nice.
Yeah.
Let's get into it.
I mean, I don't recommend you do that, but you could, I think.
I might. We start off with Bernard and Dolores in the old secret meeting room.
Ah, yes. Many times we've been here now.
Many times. And he's wearing his little black outfit.
Yep, she's dressed, he's dressed. She's upset, like really upset, crying. I don't really know what the jumping off point for this was.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible for us to know. We have no context. This room is completely removed from the rest of the storyline. Mm-hmm. All we know is that she's upset about her parents being hurt.
Yes. To begin, Bernard asks Dolores if she knows where she is. She responds, "I'm in a dream." We can assume she's saying this because she's programmed to consider all interactions with park employees as dreams or nightmares.
Right.
Like we learned earlier.
Right.
We learn that Dolores has just seen her parents be hurt and then killed, which prompted her to run away. We don't know yet, though, like you were saying, Ross, if she's recounting the scene we just saw at the end of episode 3 that led her to run away to William.
Yeah.
It could be.
It's hard to know.
But that happens to her every single time.
Right.
Where her parents die.
It's part of her loop.
Bernard tells her that he can make the pain that this event has caused her go away. And she responds, "The pain, their loss, it's all I have left of them." We've heard that before.
Yeah, it's a sentiment that Bernard expressed regarding his son, which is very interesting. They had that exact same...
Yeah.
She says it the exact same way.
And Bernard, hearing her say that, asks her if they wrote that for her, if Westworld wrote that line for her. You know what I was thinking? Maybe Bernard thinks Lee Sizemore was spying on him and stole his line.
I think he's just mostly trying to figure out why she said, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I know, yeah. I like to read way too into it, though, and assume that there's some little rift between him and Lee Sizemore.
You're trying to make everything about Lee Sizemore. You're just the biggest Lee Sizemore fan.
He is my second favorite character.
Behind who?
Logan.
Yeah, Logan's pretty great.
I'll talk more about that later. But yeah, so we find out that they kind of wrote it. She adapted that whole speech from a scripted dialogue about love.
Right, which I don't really know what that means, but it sounds tight.
Yeah. So it's just showing that she's still, you know, going through her programming. She's not, that wasn't some thought she came up with on herself, by herself. Dolores then asks Bernard if there's something wrong with the thoughts that she's having. And Bernard says no, but like we've seen before, he says that other people may not feel the same way he does about whether or not her thoughts are right or wrong.
Yeah, he references not being the only one making the calls,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting. And she goes on to say, like, I think there may be something wrong with this world, something hiding underneath, either that or there's something wrong with me. I may be losing my mind.
And I was pretty interested by Bernard's response to this because he really didn't seem that affected by it.
He doesn't seem that affected by anything, to be fair.
Yeah, that's very,
very even keel, maybe the most even keel human to ever walk the face of the earth.
So you would think he might be like concerned that this host is having all these crazy like self-reflection thoughts.
Right.
But all he does is just take his glasses off and says he wants her to try playing a secret game called
The Maze.
So now we know that Bernard knows about The Maze.
Yes.
Before we did not know that.
Yeah, he says there's something I'd like you to try, a game, a secret. It's called The Maze. That he'd like her to try to find the center of it, and if she can, maybe she can be free.
Hmm? So we don't know that much about the maze so far. All we know is that it's something that some hosts and Bernard know about.
Right.
And that the maze is not meant for the man in black.
Apparently. Well, because he's not a host.
Yeah, that's what we have to assume.
Is what I take that to mean, yeah. That it's meant for hosts.
Exactly what I thought.
Yeah.
That's why Bernard is bringing it up to a host.
Right, right,
to
right.
play.
Yeah.
Bernard didn't go up to the man in black and say, hey, man in black, I have a game I want you to play.
Well, at least as far as we know, yeah.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, but Dolores' response to that proposition from Bernard is, I think I want to be free.
Indeed.
It's like, all right, what does this mean? Is Dolores now on the same path as the man in black in an attempt to find the middle of this maze? What?
Yeah.
So much talk of this maze, episodes now, and we have yet to see it.
Yeah, the only time we see it is in Kissy's scalp and in the dirt when
later in this
daughter.
Episode, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I assume that is not the maze. Like Dolores can't just go in the dirt and like trace her finger to the center and then win.
That would have been easy enough.
That would have been really easy.
She didn't even try it. Honestly, I would have given it a shot if I was her, but hey,
yeah,
I'm right? not her and she's not me.
Maybe she's like self-conscious and thinks she's really bad at mazes. I actually think I'm pretty bad at mazes.
You know, I haven't tried to do a maze in a really long time. I don't know if I'm good or bad. The only maze that I'm familiar with as of late is the one in Fortnite, and that one I just knocked down with a hammer, so I can't tell you if I'm good or bad at it.
I don't like the fact that you say that you knocked it down with a hammer, which is clearly rubbing in the face the fact that you've won Fortnite before and got a hammer instead of a pickaxe.
I do have the fancy pickaxe now, yeah.
I've never won. This is not a Fortnite podcast. It could be, but it's not.
Maybe one day.
Cut to Dolores waking up. But this time, she's outside under a tree instead of in her bed. She has a gun in her hand and looks freaked out, but then sees William handing her a cup of coffee, and she seems fine. If you connect this with the previous scene, it seems almost as if Bernard was able to speak with Dolores while she was sleeping in the park in between when she ran away and when she woke up at William's camp.
Right. Like, I was severely confused. Is that what we're supposed to assume happened? It All right, here's the thing. In just the context of these two first scenes, I assumed that that was the case. Like, all right, we're supposed to, based on she says it's a dream, this whole thing seemed like that's when it just made chronological sense. But this episode has so much bouncing back and forth between different characters and things.
It's bizarre.
It's really hard to tell if this is happening in order, even. Like, I don't know what the fuck is going on anymore.
Because later on, there's a scene with Maeve that we'll talk about where she, like, tells the future, and then that future...
But is like, now or then? Like,
but we don't know. We know she can't tell the future, but we assume she can't. But we know she can tell the past, so we have to assume... This whole timeline of this episode
here's
is
the
so
thing.
Messed up.
You have to really take it down to this. The conversation with Bernard and Dolores takes place. Then there's a, 10-second scene of Dolores waking up and being handed a cup of coffee, and that's it. There's no importance in her in them showing us that right after the scene with Bernard, unless it's to make us think that Bernard was communicating with her while she was asleep.
Very true. There's no value in that scene aside from the framing of
because we go straight
scene.
From there to Maeve's saloon to what is it called, Mariposa or whatever.
So now let's just assume that that's the case. Is Bernard talking to these hosts? Is there a surrogate of these hosts that he can like communicate through? Like one stays in the park and one stays in that little secret room?
Yeah, I don't know, man. That's the one of the questions I have about, I guess, the way all the timing works with Westworld and its operations are is related to, we see a lot of time being spent with these hosts in headquarters, being cleaned, being interviewed, being changed, being whatever. It's such an amount of time that it seems like the park would be in operation at those times? Like,
or
what
at least
do?
Those hosts would be gone.
Because we know you as a guest can spend the night in the park. You can stay as long as you want if you have the money for it. So what, are you just... There's just times when there's just a bunch of hosts missing?
I mean, we see Maeve die twice in this episode alone.
Right.
And how are we supposed to know that that has to be... You can only die once per like trip, I always assume.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's bizarre.
And again, this is the kind of thing where it's like, at some point with Westworld, you have to suspend disbelief enough to just say, all right, I'm going to stop asking questions that there are no answers to. Because this is an example of one where it's like, we're never going to get that explanation.
You are not meant to understand yet.
We're not meant to have a full understanding of anything,
Because, they're trying to keep us... You can't understand this park. There's so much going on. So yeah, if you're a first time watcher and you don't understand what's going on, that is normal.
Yeah,
you should know. If you did, then there's been a spoiler for you.
Yes.
So, just leave it at that. And then we go to Maeve in the Mariposa Saloon in Sweetwater, where things get unhinged. Ross,
they do. Gets chaotic quick,
but luckily we start off with a great hooker line alert.
Yeah, we've got Maeve and Clementine having some hooker talk. About a cowpoke from Abilene.
Maeve says, ever had something on the tip of your tongue, and the harder you try to remember it, the more it slips away. And Clementine responds, most things that touch the tip of my tongue, I'm happy to forget.
Dick joke.
She's
talking about dicks.
But she...
And vaginas, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
She goes both ways.
She does. And we also learn of a man who fucks.
Yeah, this is very interesting. She's talking... This cowpoke from Abilene, who apparently... is like the Westworld version of Podrick from Game of Thrones, where Maeve says she recalls Clementine allowing this cowpoke to skip out on his bill. Clementine jokes that she should have been paying him the way he used that thing.
He's talking about, I assume here, this might be going on a limb, I assume she is talking about the man's penis.
It's his hog, if you will. Yeah.
Dong?
And hog. And he's good with it. And Clementine appreciated that. Didn't make the man pay.
She says she should have paid him.
She says she should have paid him. Yeah. But in the middle of this cute, fun hooker convo they're having, suddenly everything kicks into slow motion for Maeve, and she's like tweaking out again.
Yep.
This guest is like laughing in slow motion, and suddenly there's blood coming from Clementine's eye.
There's buzzing and high-pitched whines.
Yeah, there's crazy-ass noises. Maeve and her are suddenly on the ground shot.
Yeah. We don't see them be shot.
No, it just happened. They're just suddenly there.
And the most confusing part about this scene for me, I feel like it all makes general sense if you kind of understand how they like to shoot this. Maeve says there's something in Clementine's eye before we as a viewer see that there's blood in her eye.
Yeah.
Before she gets shot. So
this is where things start to get weird with Maeve.
Yes.
Because there is some type of seeing taking place.
Mm-hmm. Either the future or the past. We don't know. It would make sense
or
to me.
Simultaneous. Yeah. It's fucking weird.
Like, the only way I rationalized it, I know we're not supposed to rationalize it, but the way I did was, if that guy who went on the shooting spree was actually a host and not a guest, then maybe they get shot the same way every time, and she was seeing back to one of those shootings. Because we don't know that that guy's actually a guest. We only assume just because he went and shot everybody.
I mean, if this was a normal part of their loop, I feel like we would have been familiar with it by now.
Yeah.
It certainly seems to be a guest.
It does. So, yeah, we don't know what the hell's going on. All we know is that Maeve sees something in Clementine's eye, then they both get shot, and then Maeve is like either fully or semi-conscious the entire way from getting shot to getting fixed up and getting put back in the park.
Right. This is where it gets freaky, because the cleaning crew comes in to clean up the situation, as they do, and Maeve seems to be aware of everything happening. We hear two employees talking about the need to remove a bullet one more bullet fragmentation that's in her abdomen, but another employee insists that they need her topside like immediately.
Yeah.
So she gets wheeled off. This is where the abdominal pain we've seen before and heard explained comes from.
I thought she had MRSA. They said she had MRSA.
That's how she got MRSA.
Oh.
This is the bullet that wasn't fully cleaned out.
Yeah, I knew that this was a bullet that was left in her. I just thought that they cleaned the MRSA out last time, and then she got shot again.
See, that's where I think this gets confusing, because I think it's I took this as like a flashback to the source of the MRSA.
Oh, that could be. I don't know how MRSA works. Maybe if we ever have that guest on who can tell us about having sex with corpses, maybe he also is an expert on MRSA.
Perhaps.
I think that those two go hand in hand.
As far as I know, they do. I don't know anything about either one.
But what we do know that comes into very large play later is that there is a bullet left in Maeve, and she has heard about that.
Yeah.
She heard them say there's a bullet left in her, which is definitely important. Part of the reason why.
At the end of the episode, yeah. Yeah, but then suddenly Maeve, as she's kind of, I guess, reliving or seeing the future, whatever she's doing with this whole being cleaned up bullet fragmentation situation, suddenly she's all of a sudden back in the saloon reliving the tip of the tongue scene all over again, talking about the cowpoke from Abilene.
Mm-hmm. So the way I read into this is that she just got shot and then got fixed up and then sent right back into her narrative loop already in progress. Like coming back from a live sporting event to the local news. Already in progress.
Perhaps. But so she flips out and bails immediately.
Yeah. She freaks out and wonders if she's gone mad. She heads back to her dwelling.
Well, she's flashing like back and forward all over the place to other memories, like in headquarters or something in the past. Or
would you say she's Wylan?
Yes. And it results in her, like, she starts to write herself a note, or rather she draws herself a picture of these men she keeps seeing in hazmat gear cleaning her up.
Yeah.
Of course, she doesn't know it's hazmat gear because hazmat gear is not a thing to her. But, and she's in another room in another place when she starts to draw this picture for herself.
Yeah, it looks like it's her house that she went back to.
Right.
And she sees there's blood on her shirt, which obviously she knows she wasn't bleeding that day.
Her undergarment.
Yeah, she's assuming that's blood from when she was shot that just wasn't cleaned off, which seems, again, very lazy. But if you work at Westworld, you know, like, that doesn't mean anything to a normal functioning host.
Right.
So you can just leave that shit there and they won't question it.
Yeah, and then she hears guys coming and she hides this picture in the floor. She pulls up the floorboard to hide this picture, and holy shit, there's a bunch of other pictures that she's drawn before.
Yep, that was wild.
And this has all happened before, clearly. Yeah. Many, many times, at least like 6 times.
It's pretty fucking crazy. Like, can you imagine going to put a drawing you just made away and seeing that you had drawn it like 6 or so times before and just had never knowing that you did that?
Are you making a grilled cheese sandwich?
Yeah, Micah's in his kitchen at his pool house right now.
This is the most bizarre thing I've ever been party to.
First off, he filled his Yeti up with ice by just clanking it. He's making iced tea? He's making cold brew coffee. Oh my God, okay. Well, so yeah, we go from there to the Mesa Hub. Elsie is arguing with Teresa over what happened with the woodworker Stray. Teresa is saying that Elsie is lying about the host behavior being within normal parameters to avoid admitting that she fucked up, and that she's pretty much characterizing that action as representative of the behavior team as a whole, saying that they like to cover shit up.
there's a lot of tension between these groups.
Yeah. Quality assurance and behavior.
Yeah.
And Elsie wants to figure out what went wrong, but Teresa's like, nope, it's in our jurisdiction now. And then she, like...
Well, she has her own team that she's going to have handle it.
Yeah, and then Elsie just shots fired at the QA tech, saying he couldn't debug a napkin. That's such a bad burn, Elsie.
The guy didn't even get a rebuttal. He's just sitting there.
He's just like, what? What are you talking? Debug a napkin.
He's like, yeah, come on.
I mean...
That wasn't necessary.
Is that like a crumpled up napkin and like making it uncrumpled? Is that how you debug a napkin?
I think that's the joke, yes.
It's not a great joke.
No. But we're not here to judge jokes.
Or Elsie, for that matter.
Yeah.
Bernard lets Teresa take it because he says everyone has a lot on their plates. You can just take it. And Elsie is pissed about this because she's like, dude, you never have my back and you just gave up. And she's like, also, you know exactly what's going on and you try to downplay this whole thing and you know that this is a problem, but you just are acting like it's not.
Right.
And then she's like Abernathy, the woodworker. She still doesn't know about Dolores and Maeve, but she knows that this has happened twice now. Bernard is just like, you're making this up, chick. He says the hosts don't imagine things. You do. That's not Orion. There are 3 stars in Orion's belt, not 4.
Which, look, I get that he's, that point about it not being Orion's belt does play well with what he's saying,
yeah.
But it doesn't immediately erase everything that she's just said.
Because why is he carving that? Why is he, like,
there's... Like, it doesn't really matter which fucking constellation it is, dude. Something is going on here, and he's like, nah, that's not Orion.
But somehow that's kind of enough for Elsie to at least give up then.
She's like, oh, he has a point.
I've noticed that Bernard is very, very good at getting Elsie to not go over his head to somebody else.
Yeah, no shit.
He is keeping her in line. He's an expert manager.
Indeed, he is. And I don't know what his deal is. He just doesn't seem to care about anything.
Yeah. We cut to Dolores and William back at the camp. William wants to take Dolores back to Sweetwater because he thinks this bounty hunt isn't safe for her. Do you know who doesn't like that idea?
I'm going to guess Logan.
It was Logan. He's already pissed that William has dragged him on this stupid bounty hunt. And he's not about to head back to Sweetwater to drop off a host. He's like, I'll just fucking kill her.
Yeah, the host they have taking them on this bounty hunt is like, if we leave now, that no good outlaw Slim Miller is sure to evade our grasp. And Logan is like, no fucking way. Yeah, like he offers to kill her so that the park will come clean her up, just pick her up.
Which is just shows the rift between how Logan thinks about the park and how William thinks about the park.
The divide is unsettling.
It's so bizarre. And it gets even more unsettling throughout this whole entire storyline.
Yes, this episode is the most telling about the differences between Logan and William, and at least that we've had so far. And I have some questions about that later on.
So one thing that Logan... you know, has a bigger grasp of than William is how the park works. So he's like, hey, I mean, we don't know if this is true or not, but we do know that Logan says Dolores was sent to William by the Mesa Hub as a means of getting him more invested in his experience.
Yeah, it clicks within Logan, and he has this theory that because she was the only thing he even smiled at back in Sweetwater, that they sent Dolores to them.
From what we know,
to give him a sense of purpose. Yeah.
From what we know, that doesn't appear to be the case, but we have no idea about the inner workings, the direct inner workings. Maybe the reason she went specifically to William was because of that. We don't know.
But what we do find out is Logan drops this gem of a quote on us. This is why the company needs to bump our stake in this place. Mm-hmm. They can even give you a sense of purpose. We'll just jumble all this together. At one point, William says, you said the trip was about welcoming me to the family. This is business. And Logan's response is, with our family, William, everything is business. So what we find out here is a lot.
Yeah.
First of all, the company that they work for on the outside has a stake in Westworld. Mm-hmm. Second of all, Logan's sister, who William is dating.
Engaged to, or married to, one of the two.
Their whole family owns this company, apparently, that they work for, that William works for as well. And they're a very business-oriented family.
Yeah.
Where everything revolves around the business.
Indeed.
And this is more of a research trip for Logan William previously knew.
You got to wonder if they got this trip for free.
Based on that, I would think they can at least write it off based on that conversation.
Which would be dope for them. And would actually...
40 grand a day.
It would make Logan's whole bitching a little bit less warranted. Because he's... Maybe he just wants to make the most of every time he goes to Westworld. But like, dude, if it's free, you can afford to... No.
I mean, they don't seem to be in a hurry to get in and out.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, so Logan's words worked, and William does not seem concerned anymore with getting Dolores back to Sweetwater. He's just like, eh, you can roll with us.
Yeah.
Cut to the Men in Black and Lawrence.
Yeah, we bounce right over to the Men in Black, who's killing a rattlesnake at the Blood Arroyo, where we know, you know, as we saw in the previously on Westworld, it how he got to this point, we are reminded. But then he sees this woman with this crazy gnarly snake tattoo topless bathing in a river.
And we've seen her before.
We have. She was part of the bank or the Mariposa
safe heist,
yeah, with Hector.
Now, this is the craziest part of this to me, is that the man in black, when he's talking to her, says that he's never seen her before.
Yeah, and all right, I had the exact same thought. What's weird about this, it gets weirder, is later he spends some time in the prison with Hector, where he acknowledges to Hector that he has seen Hector many times, but that he had no interest in doing anything with Hector because he considered him to be like a, basically for low level, like, dipshit.
Market research created him.
Yes, yes. Now, for him to have noticed Hector, but not the woman with this gnarly facial tattoo, the snake's head ends on her eye, to have never seen her before is hard to believe. But he does say, he tries to wrap it up in an explanation of like, what a bad oversight by me or something like that. And it's kind of like, okay.
Dude, you know everything. And he even says to Hector later, what you want is not in that safe. So he knows about the safe heist that she is the main gunwoman in.
Yeah. It makes no sense.
Now, we do see she's covered up in like the, you know, kind of shrouds. Yeah, but there's no way.
Come on, man.
He knows everything. He knows about a major... storyline that everybody in the Mesa Hub like stops what they're doing when this storyline goes on.
And as he has said many times, he knows everything about this whole freaking park. He's played every possible game. He's won every single angle except for one, and that's the maze. Why wouldn't he know about this woman? Come on now.
Truly one of the probably the biggest potential oversight that we've seen so far in a show that's usually perfectly wrapped together.
I would have to agree. I wouldn't say the show is ever perfectly wrapped together because I don't think it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But I will say that is the biggest come on, man moment so far.
So the man in black, when he sees Snake Lady, he thinks he's in the right place, like we said, because he's never seen her before. He's like, oh, this is probably it. And Lawrence asks the man in black what he hopes to find. This is before he sees the woman bathing in the river. I just feel like we should mention this. And he says something he says a lot. This whole world is a story. I've read every page except the last one, like you said. I need to find out how it ends. I want to know what this all means.
Yeah. So he's looking for some kind of...
closure?
Deeper meaning to the park. Deeper meaning to life. To the purpose of the park, perhaps. It's just... we don't really know. Yeah. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense yet. He says a lot of deep shit that as viewers who are slowly being given information as the... showrunners see fit, we just kind of have to take it as it is on face value. So
the man in black tries to tag along with the snake woman, and but they're like, no, there's no more room in our group. We're just gonna kill you.
Yeah, they get jumped.
Yeah, and then he's like, he just turns around and kills two guys, and he's like, oh, looks like you got space now, a couple open positions.
And she's like, yep, that was good enough for me.
She respected his boldness.
She did.
You gotta very bold move.
Feel bad for those two guys that got knocked off, though. It's like they were part of a squad. Now they're not. They're dead.
They got done wrong.
They did. Not fair of the snake tattoo lady to just let those two guys get bumped off with no. That's just not right. I feel for them.
Yeah, those guys, those hosts were. They were just trying to live their host lives.
For real. That's their loop.
Maybe this episode is going to be dedicated to those two guys that the man in black killed.
Yeah. Yeah, this crew that they're now rolling with, the man in black and Lawrence, they're going to retrieve something of great value
mm-hmm.
from a prison?
Yeah, we find out later from the O'Hall prison. There's
it's
a
Hector. Yeah. Is the great the thing of great value, correct?
Well, they said it was a cannon.
No, the cannon they were going to get from a group of Union soldiers to use to get into the prison, but the man in black is like, fuck that, I don't have time for all this shit. I'll go get Hector out of the prison. Oh. You don't even need the cannon. And then he executes his plan, as we see in a little bit. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he talks her into skipping that whole charade.
Yeah. So after the man in black is, you know, he joins along with that squad. It cuts back to the Mesa Hub quick.
Yeah.
And we finally see that they are noticing at the headquarters Dolores' deviation from her loop.
It's about fucking time. Yeah. An employee alerts, a random employee alerts Ashley. What's his last name?
Stubbs, the A-team. She tells Ashley that Ford is disrupting so many storylines right now that they can't even tell if Dolores is accompanying a guest or not. And we know
which
that
just doesn't seem ideal if trying to manage a park.
No. Like, we know that they can see everything that's going on with individual guests. You know, we like when the woodworker's running away, we see like a crazy video of him like running through the fucking mountains.
Right, right.
And they can't even tell right now if Dolores, one of the main hosts, is with a guest or not.
Apparently not.
Ford is fucking shit up in this place.
Apparently so.
So Ashley Stubbs says to have her flagged and pulled from the park.
Yes, he does.
He does, yeah. So they actually, for the first time, are pulling Dolores because of some sort of aberrant behavior that she's exhibiting. It took a long time. It took a very long time.
Right, and we're not even clear on what triggered this.
Nope.
At all. We're not supposed to be.
And we can assume it's because she's so far away from where she normally hangs out.
Right. I guess, perhaps.
But that would be normal behavior if she was with a guest. So,
and she is.
She is. They just don't know that. And that's why this next scene with Dolores in Lawrence's hometown is so interesting to me, is because it seems like they send in a host to extract Dolores and bring her, they say, back to Abernathy Ranch, but I would assume that's them extracting her from the park.
Yeah, this is really bizarre. So she's like in this small town. She finds a little girl that...
Lawrence's daughter.
Lawrence's daughter, who obviously Lawrence is currently being dragged around by the men in black. She's sitting on a well. Dolores asks her where she's from. And the little girl says, same as you. Don't you remember? And this triggers the remember freak out with Dolores. Then she notices the little girl has been drawing a maze in the sand, Jared, as you referenced earlier. Mm-hmm. And then that guy walks up and says, ma'am, got word a girl went missing from Abernathy Ranch. Is that where you belong? I'm sure your daddy's worried about you. And he grabs her as if to, like, he's going to take her manually back to the ranch. And she grabs him back and gets this, I don't know how else to describe, violent look on her face.
Very violent.
Yeah, like she's ready to throw down. Then all of a sudden, William emerges from the store and breaks up this whole situation.
Yeah, and so the way I interpreted this was the second that this host sent in to extract Dolores found out that she was with a guest, he's like, oh, okay, my bad.
It didn't even strike me as a host. I thought it was like a park employee or something.
Oh, I think it was a host, just really? Based on the way it was. Because I feel like we saw Elsie at one point dressed up to go into the park organically. So there's a chance that could be a guy. Yeah. The way he was just acting made it seem like he was a host.
I will say this. The part of it, the only part of it to me that seemed host-ish was him being like, oh, okay. And then going on his way once another thing was introduced. But I don't know.
And the grabbing, because you're a park employee. Wouldn't you just make them...
Freeze
all motor functions.
Yeah, it's a good point.
So
And
I think one thing we need to talk about, just because it was so bizarre and it just has a lot of potential meaning, but we don't have any context for it, is Dolores, what she saw in those flashbacks with Lawrence's daughter.
What do you mean?
So when she says, "Don't you remember?" we see a church that could be that church that Dr. Ford brought.
Sure looked like it.
Sure looked like it. Same steeple. Just a whole church and not just the top.
Right.
So there was that, but there was a lot more shit that Dolores saw that just kind of flashes on the screen for a split second, like subliminal advertising. And here are what they were. I paused through it and found out. There was Dolores walking into that church. There's a shot of a small town that seems to be outside of that church. We see Lawrence's daughter. We see a graveyard outside the church. We see Dolores holding a gun. And then this is the craziest one. This is the last thing that before the man comes in and says, "Hey, ma'am, are you lost?" We see Dolores on her knees in a graveyard in front of a grave marker that says Dolores Abernathy on it.
What?
What the fuck? And there's a man in a suit that's standing right behind her. Go back through the episode. If you didn't even think to stop through that, go back and pause, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. We have no idea what any of this means, but all we know is that at one point in her life, Dolores was kneeling next to a grave of her own grave.
Damn. Obviously, I didn't pause through it, but that's crazy.
Yeah. So, yeah. Dolores is also hearing whispers in her head at this time as well.
Yeah, lots of voices going on.
So this scene, we're not even going to attempt to go through it because there is nothing to go through. We're not meant to know what this is. We're meant to know that this is a flashback she had, but we have no idea the context or anything.
Right.
So that's fucking wild.
Then we flash back over to the man in black.
Yes.
Like I said earlier in the pod, lots of bouncing back and forth quickly between these different characters. And the man in black is with the snake tattoos posse. So yeah, we bounce over to the man in black who's with the snake tattoo ladies posse, and she's meeting with some men for some information and then murders them in badass fashion.
Yeah, we've got a slit a guy's throat and then she just shoot the guy.
But like, she does it with some swag.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, this is not like when the man in black does it when he has no, you know, fear of repercussion. This snake tattoo lady is just
it's a real deal.
She crushes it. Maybe I'll dedicate the episode to her.
And that was it. We bounced over there just for that.
Yep. Like you were saying, we just bounced a shit ton in this episode between the different storylines.
All over the characters, all over the place. Yeah.
Cut back to William and Dolores.
Hey, we're doing it again.
William asks Dolores where she's headed, and she says, "I don't really know yet." Then goes off in a long speech about not knowing where her path leads. I would love to have Bernard abilities here so I could ask Dolores if that whole steer down the mountainside speech she gave was scripted or not.
And or to say, please shut up.
Yeah.
Because this whole speech she gives about, like, basically, look, all right, at this point, we get it. She explains that she feels something calling her, something beyond all this. We've heard, like, we get this at this point.
Yeah. It's like she wants this really bad, and she needs it in her eyes. The man in black, who is also searching for the center of the maze, he just wants it. He thinks he needs it, but he doesn't.
Yeah, I don't even know what drives him, to be honest. But suddenly Dolores is tweaking out again, having memories of employees and shit, and we don't know where these visions are coming from.
This is her first time remembering an employee, I think.
I believe you're correct. But she sees the same kind of deal that Maeve was seeing.
Yep, the spacesuit man.
It looks like
a shade, as they call it later on.
Right, right.
So yeah, Dolores, it seems very reminiscent, this speech, of her off-script quest to find out about herself. But it could also just be something that's programmed into her, like some sort of longing for, you know, more purpose of life.
Yeah, maybe. Part of her underlying reason for existing as a host or whatever.
And I'm going to drop in right here real quick, something that I probably should have brought up already, and that is the symbolism of Dolores' name.
Oh, please explain. I'm not familiar with this.
As we know, because I brought it up, and I bring it up typically at any opportunity that's you know, it's possible to bring up, and I do have a Spanish degree.
Must be nice.
Yes, I do. Double major. Shouts to me. That's the Micah special. Shouts to me. He loves doing that. Dolores in Spanish means pains. So we can see that Dolores is in a lot of pain. She gets killed all the time. She is trying to find herself in her own head. So if you ever wondered if there was symbolism there, her name means pains.
Pains.
Dolores. Very just a little fun fact that I bet you. A lot of people probably already knew.
Thank God you have a Spanish degree, you know?
Did you know that I had one before I just said it right now?
Because if you didn't, we wouldn't have had that great parallel.
Just thought I'd slip that in there.
Thank you, Jared.
Cut back to the man in black and Laurence. A guy who is clearly a guest walks up to the Man in Black and says that he's such an admirer of the Man in Black and his foundation because it literally saved his sister's... We don't know what it saved his sister's...
He saved his sister's life.
We assume.
Is what he was going to say. This is bizarre. This is one of the bigger moments in the episode for me because we have not seen the Man in Black interact with guests, have we? Yeah, so this is... Where'd this guy come from? Were these other guests part of this narrative before the Man in Black joined it?
I think they were part of the posse. That
what if he had accidentally shot them? Again, this comes up.
Yep.
Because he picked two guys at random.
Well, they would have just got bruises, as we saw from William.
Oh, yeah.
They probably would have been like, dude, what the fuck? Can you imagine, like...
Ow!
Can you imagine that conversation? Oh, fuck, dude, you hit me in the head. Oh, dude, I'm so sorry, man. I really apologize.
Yeah, so this, I mean, the whole, this, all right, the Man in Black has a foundation. That seems like it could be important at some point. Mm-hmm. This foundation saves people.
In some way.
In some way. Perhaps their lives, perhaps their houses, perhaps their pets. Maybe it's pets. Maybe
it could
it's,
be. Maybe you save my sister's turtle.
Right. Yeah, maybe it's a pet of some kind.
So this guy's a good guy in real life in some way.
Maybe.
It seems he's at least in charge of a foundation.
Being in charge of a foundation, a good man does not make. nothing like that means anything. But, yeah, it's pretty telling. Maybe it just at least gets you to ask the question, is it possible that this guy is completely different in the real world than he is this badass evil dude within Westworld? And the answer is yes. It's absolutely possible that he is nothing like this.
Yeah, because this random guy was like nervous to go up to him and like talk to him because he's that big of a deal.
Which makes you think maybe he's some kind of like Bill Gatesy type of dude. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that's the impression that I got anyway. But his response is one more word and I'll cut your throat. You understand? This is my fucking vacation. So...
He does not want to be bothered.
Yeah, it leads me to believe that he's probably at least somewhat like he acts in Westworld. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Unless nobody changes that much when they go there.
I find it hard to believe that you would. But then again, I have run around Grand Theft Auto mercilessly just murdering hookers and strangers on the street for no reason at all.
And another thing to evidence that I just realized is William says to Logan, you come here and you turn into a prick. So we have to believe that Logan
he's
is at
totally
least
different,
a
right.
little bit different, minimum less of a douchebag in outside of the park, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, no, it is. And now the more I'm thinking about it, it's like there's really no way of knowing how one would be different or the same, especially a guy like that is as complicated as the Man in Black appears to be so far. I don't know what I would do, you know? Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Free reign with no repercussions or consequences in what is... essentially a pretend world.
Why don't we pretend that Micah's pool house that we're in right now is a pretend world and there's no repercussions for anything we do in here?
I don't think you want that.
Micah, where do you keep the nice booze? Not this shitty shit you have in your bar cart. Micah's telling me to shut up. Okay. Well, this is after this conversation where the guy is just like, oh, fuck. Oops.
Yeah, he just kind of backs away.
So this is when we find out about the plan, you know, the whole O'Hall prison, get Hector out kind of plan. And then the Man in Black's just like, yep, I'll get him.
Well, the important thing here is that he wants an explanation for this tattoo.
Yes.
He believes that is the next step in his quest for the maze. And he asks her if she's ever heard of a man named Arnold, explains that he could be... You could say he's the original settler of these parts. He created a world where you could do anything you want, except one thing. You can't die, which means no matter how real this world seems, it's just a game. But then Arnold went and broke his own rule. He died right here in the park. Except I believe he had one story left to tell. A story with real stakes, real violence. You could say I'm here to honor his legacy, and I think your tattoo is the next piece of the puzzle.
I can't believe you remembered all that.
Yeah, just off the top. So... This is all very, shit is heating up. Like he's making steps towards, you know, this maze that he is looking for. This woman agrees to let him go do his thing. What is it? She's like one match, one idiot, and one
pistol
maybe, something like that.
So we learn from what the Man in Black says that number one, he thinks Arnold's behind the maze. And like you said, he thinks the snake lady's tattoo is the key to getting to the next level. But here's some food for thought that I want you to ponder. The man in black knows about Arnold dying in the park, but Bernard, who has worked at the park for a long time, doesn't even know Arnold exists. What does that say about the man in black?
Yeah, it's very, it's bizarre. It's the most telling thing we have found out about him so far, I think. And that's the level of information that he possesses is higher than anyone we have met other than Ford.
Yeah.
So, or at least at the level of, I mean, maybe he does know as much as Ford. I don't know. It's hard to say. But he knows more than Bernard.
Yeah. And then this whole Arnold thing.
And
I
he's
mean,
a guest.
Yeah. He's not, like, it's insane.
He's a guest with a foundation.
Bernard doesn't even know that Arnold existed. Not just that he died in the park, that he was a human being, which also, how did he never see that photo in Ford's office? Over? I don't know. There's a lot of weird things about how Bernard doesn't
know
Arnold.
Yeah, it's inexplicable. And then
just like there's the man in black should know about the snake lady. Like,
right.
Sometimes people, maybe we're assuming that all these are perfect human beings when humans are idiots.
True.
So, yeah, who knows?
Then the man in black explains to Lawrence that he's always been a prisoner. None of his choices are his own. What if I told you I'm here to set you free? We're kind of getting beat over the head with this thing at this point where it's kind of like, okay.
It's insane to me the amount of self-indulgence that the man in black gives himself. Like,
man, he really likes to hear himself talk.
He fucking loves it. He does it so many times with Lawrence it's and other people in this episode. It's like, dude, we know that like you're on vacation and you're here and you're excited, but like, dude, calm the fuck down.
Yeah, it's... he is all in on the pretending.
Even when Lawrence says, I'm going to fucking kill you, after the man in black says he prefers a firing squad over hanging,
yeah.
Man in black goes, maybe someday, like he's going to one day get sentience and kill him because he's going to find the center of the maze. Like, dude.
Yes.
Just please stop.
Yeah, it's too
we
much.
We get it.
It's too much, man. So him and Lawrence go to the prison as captives, as
yeah,
soon to be prisoners of the prison.
They went and stole horses in front of like sheriff's
they
deputies.
Purposely got arrested. Yes. Yeah. And we find out Lawrence Pedro Mario Gonzalez is his full name, that he's the most wanted man in three territories, which the man in black seems almost impressed by. He kind of looks over at him like, yeah, good for you, which is, again, it's weird. But he's going to be executed.
Yeah.
By a firing squad.
Lawrence, they walk him right over there. They put Man in Black in the prison, and they just walk Lawrence over there. So Lawrence is just thinking, I fucking hate this guy.
God,
so
it's the worst for Lawrence. But at this point, he's almost like, just kill me. Just please, please.
Yeah.
Just get this over with.
So then we learn the Man in Black has a plan to get out, and it's with these exploding cigars.
And he's locked in there with Hector.
Yeah.
Important.
And he wants to get out with these exploding cigars. My favorite part about the prison break is that it starts off with the Man in Black requesting a pyrotechnic effect from the Mesa Hub.
Yes. Ashley is made aware that a request for two pyrotechnic effects.
Yep.
And he's like, he approves it.
So now we know apparently you can't do pyrotechnics unless it's approved by the, that's so bizarre.
It makes no sense.
How do they know? Like, how do they know that he wants to do that?
He has comical exploding cigars.
Yeah.
You know what it makes me think, Jared, is like, have you ever been paintballing? We've talked about this before, haven't we? And you haven't.
What's that?
Yeah, we've done this before. We've been gone through this whole song and dance. Okay, when you go paintballing, you gear up at the beginning and you're like buying ammo from the store, and you can buy like a paint grenade that you throw and it will like spin. It's real expensive. Not many people buy it. It's kind of dickish. But this reminds me of that. It's like when the man in black was gearing up, he's like, and I'm going to take a box of those exploding cigars. And they're like, that'll be an extra $10,000. And yeah. He's like, give me the fucking box. You know what I mean? Like some pre-approved ridiculous. It's
straight out of a Groucho Marx movie.
Yes. Yes. He's using cigars to bust out of prison and blow people's heads up.
Yes.
And you knew this was coming. The second he offered that dude a cigar, you're like, oh, this motherfucker's so screwed. He pocketed the whole box.
Yep. That was... But yeah, apparently he had to request a pyrotechnic effect, so makes it a little less kind of cool that we know that he... There was never any doubt in his mind what was happening. Like, he knew that guy was going to put the cigar in his mouth. He knew that he was going to break out with it. Like, jeez.
Yeah, it's very hard to absorb all this information. This is why he needed the match.
Yeah. So the man in black comes out, to Lawrence's death squad. Again, Lawrence is blindfolded and about to die. He thinks he's about to die. Again. And the Man in Black just kills everybody again.
Again.
And Lawrence just goes, motherfucker, again.
You can tell how miserable he's just like, please, anything but this.
Yeah. It's the amount that the Man in Black toys with Lawrence at this point is just getting like funny. Like Lawrence, I think, is beginning to like kind of appreciate what's happening.
It's getting frustrating for me as a viewer. Like,
you want Lawrence to die?
No, well, I'm just like, stop fucking with this guy. You know what I mean? It just, yeah, it just seems so miserable. I'm not even sure what Lawrence is bringing to the table for him at this point. But
yeah, like, Dwight, do you think he has a past with Lawrence? Did he say earlier that he had a past with Lawrence? Like earlier in,
yeah,
when he met Lawrence?
Yes.
Because he knew who he was already. He's like, yes, you remember me? There must be something in their
he
past.
He was like, after all we've been through, yeah, together, you don't, yeah.
I know, oh, I know the way you whistle and you piss. Like, they must have some weird
past.
He
just likes having him along,
yeah,
for the ride. Yeah.
He just likes fucking with him.
So Hector returns to his posse, which, I'll be honest with you, I had a brain fart here, and it didn't click to me that that's where he was, that he was the valuable thing. Even as we'd seen him locked up in the room with, yeah, Hector, I wasn't like, oh, Hector is the thing.
I didn't get it till you just said that.
I'm an idiot.
Well, I'm dumber. You taught me.
And you're even stupider. So yeah, him returning to the posse was always the plan, was always how it was going to go down. Then the Man in Black gets the information he wanted from the snake tattoo lady. Do we have a name for her? Do I have to keep calling her snake?
I think
snake
her name is Armistice.
Okay, but I don't think we find that out here.
No, but that blew
up. You
her
looked
name.
It up. You cheated on the internet.
Yeah.
Snake tattoo lady it is then. She tells the Man in Black this story about her mother being like horrifically murdered and how she's been, what, tracking down each guy who was involved?
Yep, and so each time she kills a guy,
using their blood to tattoo the snake on her.
Now, I don't know if it was literally their blood that she's getting put
it
in her skin.
It sounds literal to me.
It might be. Or if it's just indicative,
I mean?
Like a symbol. But
I think it's literal.
I want to assume that she's actually getting their blood tattooed into her.
Which, I got to say, does seem like it's not sanitary.
I don't think blood is inherently sterile, and I don't think tattooing in the 1800s was also sterile.
Yeah, this seems like you're just guaranteeing at least an STD.
Maybe MRSA.
Maybe MRSA. But
we don't know.
Anyway, but there's only one section that she needs left. There's only one guy left she needs to kill to get the head of the snake, yeah, done, and it's Wyatt.
So the Man in Black is now officially in the Wyatt storyline.
Yes.
Because the maze has led him to the Wyatt storyline.
Which we are aware of being put into play by Lee Sizemore, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is he the one who wrote?
No.
No?
Ford.
Ford did.
It's Ford's
Oh,
narrative.
Yeah. But we saw the Wyatt storyline get kicked off by Ford explaining to Teddy what the storyline was going to,
yeah,
be. That was the beginning of it. And Man in Black's found his way to it.
So here's something that right now that is confusing me, that maybe you have some insight on, but probably not. No offense.
No, I'm none taken.
If Arnold created the maze, then how is the maze leading the Man in Black to something that Ford created? Is it because Armistice was already part of the maze? You know what I'm saying?
Snake tattoo lady?
Yeah, snake tattoo lady. You know what I'm saying? Like, how is the maze leading to something that Ford created like a week ago? The maze has been in place for like 30 years, or as long as Arnold's been dead.
You know, Jared, it just goes back to the whole this being confusing as fuck.
So yeah, if you had the same question I just had, yeah, there you go. It's a question that's going to linger in your head until you find out, if we ever do. That's the great part about this show.
I don't even know what you just... That just didn't even make sense to me.
This show gives you more questions than answers.
Yes.
And
every episode adds more questions to the list.
Yeah, it's great. And it's very frustrating.
The
amazing.
I will say this. The Man in Black seems to be familiar with Wyatt, at the very least. Because he smiles.
Yeah. He might have just been smiling because he got the next part of the maze.
Like he's never heard this before. Yeah. And that's something that would make him smile, having never
experienced
it.
That's how I took it.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
We cut to Maeve and Clementine watching as Native Americans are seemingly being kind of ushered out of town. One of the Native American girls. Or into town.
In Sweetwater, right?
I don't know which one it was.
I thought
they were going towards a train.
Maybe.
Well, either way, one of the Native American girls drops a spacesuit man doll, the hazmat suit guys from...
That Maeve has been drawing.
Yeah. And normally, no host could recognize that because they're not programmed to.
It wouldn't look like anything to them.
I assume that this was an Easter egg, but it was put into the park by the developers to make the shade, as we later find out from Hector, part of Native American culture. It was just something fun for them because the host will never figure it out, right? That's what they think.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't get that deep in my questioning of it. I think I've learned at this point not to.
Let's say I was making a Westworld, and I would put, like, you know, a little Ross Bolin figurine on a desk because nobody would have
just
any
to
idea
fuck
what that
with
was.
People. Yeah, to fuck yeah. With them. I mean, I get it, but I don't know if that's how I took this. At this point, it seems like, all right, I took it to be akin to like when Dolores discovers that photo, or her dad, Abernathy, does. Yeah. That wasn't meant to be discovered. That was something a guest dropped.
Yeah.
This seems like that to me.
But why would there be a figurine in the park being held by a host? That host we have no reason to believe is off of their loop at all.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's an Easter egg. But I can see why you might think it's something else.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm like I said.
Retweet for Easter egg, like for something else.
My brain is so scrambled at this point that frankly, I don't care where this little girl got this thing. It's not about where she got it. It's about what happens as a result of it.
It's about Maeve finding it.
Yeah, so she picks it up and gives it back to the little girl. The little girl, you know, continues walking, ignores Maeve basically. But a soldier, a random soldier that is part of making sure these Indians leave or whatever, Native Americans, it says that thing's part of their so-called religion. Ain't none of them's going to tell you nothing about that. How the fuck would this guy know that?
Maybe he deals with a lot of Native Americans.
Here's what makes it weird if it's an Easter egg. It's an Easter egg that has such an effect on the park that a random soldier is aware that the fucking Native Americans have turned the Easter egg into a religious thing. The show's crazy. I don't even know.
Yeah, that is weird. And the fact that it is a part of their religion, a large part,
well,
like we
known
find out, the walk between worlds. They even gave it.
The gringos know about this religion. Native Americans don't call white people gringos, do they?
I don't think so.
Paleface, that's what they
are. Well, I think Hector is at least.
He's part.
They said he was part, yeah.
Or he at least lives with them, stays out there. Anyway, point being, what is the point? Shit is just being piled on top of all these questions we have at this point.
So let's just go on from there.
Yeah, okay. Maeve and Clementine talk again. Maeve recognizes a John who rides with Hector. And Clementine says, the one they say lives out with the savages. And this clicks in Maeve's head. Okay, I've got questions about this Native American religious figurine that I've been drawing and seeing. Now I know who to ask. Hector. And because you're Maeve and you know things you're not supposed to know, what do you know? You know that Hector is going to come rob the saloon.
Yep.
So you wait for him. Mm-hmm. Presumably that's what happens here. He comes in to rob the saloon. She busts a gun to his head, takes him into a side room. I guess I'm bouncing way ahead at this point.
A little bit, but I mean, we're gonna talk about it anyways.
Well, fuck it. Let's stay on track.
Okay.
But
so after
that's
Maeve,
how that all unfolds. Yeah.
Yeah. After Maeve realizes that she's going to want to, you know, talk to Hector about this, we cut to Bernard and Teresa post Smang.
Yeah, I was interested in this because Bernard has a t-shirt on and his boxer briefs.
Yeah. Covering up his penis.
Well, not even. I just wondered, like, did they already have sex and he got dressed again? Or was it just, like, quick sex and he just didn't even get undressed? Or, like, what's the deal?
We don't claim to know about Bernard's sexual prowess or his manners in which he has it.
Just show us your cock, Bernard. That's all I'm saying.
Honestly,
you know?
Yeah.
You know? What are you doing, bro?
I think that would really add a lot to the story.
Teresa's rude.
She's not very nice.
She's just getting dressed, and he's like, what the hell? We just finished. And she's like, oh, you gave me what I needed.
Yeah, and he's like, okay, I thought maybe
Is that all I'm good for?
Yeah.
It's like, at first I was like, she's a bitch, but this is kind of their relationship. It's very weird and playful and cold, but in like a humorous way. I think you could classify, based on what we've seen of the two of them, Bernard and Teresa are both weirdos.
Yeah, they are very weird.
These are weird people. Okay.
They're not normal.
Glad we established
that. Bernard's a creep, and Teresa is a bitch.
Fair enough. Those are good descriptions of both of them.
And they say that weirdos attract.
They do.
Teresa tells Bernard, tomorrow I have to talk to Ford. He's creating chaos in the park. So she lets him in on the information that she is going to have a conversation with Ford to try to smooth things out because the board is giving her shit. Everything is, as we know, has been mentioned many times, everything that Ford is doing is causing chaos and mayhem in the park.
Did you know that humans cross our arms as a means of covering our bellies in case of an unexpected attack?
I didn't until I saw this episode.
Didn't either.
Yeah.
And
because it's the most vulnerable section of our bodies.
Did not know it.
Jared?
Yeah.
Don't stand like that or you look like a pussy. That's the story. That's the lesson to be taken
away
from
that.
And
then we see
that
Teresa did not stand like that. She's still with her hands on her hips in by far the biggest scene of this episode.
This was crazy shit here.
I'll let you take it.
We go straight to Teresa in the park to see the construction Ford has going. Visually, I don't even know how they pulled this off. There are hosts everywhere. They're like working in slave-like fashion. There's a giant crazy machine digging.
It's the biggest digging machine I've ever seen.
What the hell is that thing? It looks like something from Avatar.
It was crazy. It was a massive, massive drill made to make huge holes and destroy mountains.
Yes. That is the only thing it could be described as that is what it is. It's fucking crazy. And Ford takes Teresa to this it's like a country club in the midst of the construction?
Yeah, it looked like, so there was a huge agave farm out back, or aloe farm, one of the two.
Right.
And it looked like a sort of Spanish-style villa, that, like, kind of like a Spanish-style plantation home type deal.
Yeah, and at first I was like, well, it doesn't really matter what this is. Maybe it's a permanent restaurant that's been here, maybe it's not. But then Teresa references it, that she came to the park as a child, and that she thinks she might have sat at this exact same table, or maybe it was that one over there, with her parents.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, okay, what is going on here? What is this area that he is building all this new shit in, where this building has been? Teresa's a grown woman. She's got to be, what, 45?
At least.
And she was there, what, 30 years ago minimum?
Mm-hmm.
It just, everything that we find out here gets even more, this is the most confusing episode yet. During the midst of this conversation with Teresa, Ford freezes the motor functions of every host without a word, including the one who's pouring wine for Teresa. And the reason we become aware of this is because her wine glass is filled to the brim and then over the brim and continues to overflow all over the table. We look up. Every host that was working in the fields has frozen. Every host that we see on the screen, totally frozen, has frozen all motor functions.
And Ford's doing, obviously.
Just with the point of his finger, yes. It seems.
So this is Ford saying to Teresa, I am the god of this world.
Yeah, the way he frames it up with her, with the story, with everything that goes on in this scene, it's not a threat, but he's saying, like, look, I understand that you people think you're doing something here, you money men, you think you have to keep the train on the tracks, but what you're failing to realize is that I can do whatever I want, and there's nothing you can do to stop me, essentially.
And he says, stay out of my way.
Yes. He's saying, like, figure out whatever it is you need to do to keep your fucking little business happy, because this shit I'm doing, this isn't changing.
Yeah.
This is happening, whether you like it or not.
And she doesn't really like that.
She has no rebuttal, though.
Yeah. She does look genuinely scared, though.
The meal ends abruptly. Well, you can imagine being in her shoes there. This is a man who has hundreds of hosts under his control that doesn't even need verbal commands to make them do things.
Mm-hmm.
He could have them all attack her at once. He could have them do whatever he wants.
Yeah, Ford is quickly becoming a character that appears more and more sinister than he originally seemed to be.
Yes. The mix of his not caring about what's going on or how it affects anyone else and the amount of control and power he has over the hosts in the park combined, those two things are scary.
Indeed. So that's what happened with that whole Ford and Teresa thing. We cut to my favorite part of the entire episode, which is William and Logan and Holden, who's the kind of bounty hunter they're with, going to encounter Slim Miller.
I love this name, Slim Miller.
Slim Miller.
Oh, shit. One more thing. Sorry.
Yes.
Another important part of that scene with Teresa, Ford, it clicks with Teresa that this is the table she sat at with her parents. And the takeaway here, and as Ford verbalizes, is that they know everything about every host. And every guest.
And every employee.
And every employee. He knew she went there as a child and sat at that table with her parents. That's why he took her there, just to make a point.
And he knew she was banging Bernard, too.
And yes. Fuck, man.
He knows everything.
And he tells her that he knows about Bernard. He says, like, be gentle with him. He has a sensitive disposition. Something along those lines.
Yeah.
I don't know what the fuck that means, but I don't know what anything means, Jared, to be frank. Sorry. Anyway, get back to Slim Miller.
So the best line of this entire episode
is
Logan jumping in to attack Slim Miller, and he opens the door, he kicks the door in, pulls out his gun, and goes, "Slap leather, cocksuckers."
What does slap leather mean?
I don't know.
This is incredible. You can tell Logan is enjoying every moment of this. Like, he kicks in the door, slap leather, cocksuckers. He's just firing off rounds left and right. This is awesome.
So apparently slap leather, that's what you call pulling your gun out in a gunfight.
Okay.
So it was like, he's saying to them, hey, pull out.
Because you slap the holster of your gun to draw the weapon.
So he's saying, like, pull your guns out, cocksuckers, because I'm already shooting you.
Yeah, yeah. That's good.
Slap leather, cocksuckers.
That's a great line.
And then when he is just going around the room, like, he looks like Lawrence from School of Rock, just like pointing his gun, like his finger around the room.
Right.
And then he's going, ho, 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 ho. He's having so much fun.
Logan's a great guy.
That's why he's my favorite.
Yes.
It's so good. And he even drinks during the gunfight too while William's freaking out. And like the guy next to William just gets his shot right through the head and Logan's just chilling.
Yeah, he doesn't care at all. He's totally unfazed. He's been there enough times to know exactly how the park works. He is no longer afraid of anything really. Every once in a while, he'll do something to kind of like play along with what's going on around. Yeah. But for the most part, he's oblivious to the emotional responses that most guests have.
And to make a Fortnite reference, after he whacks Slim Miller in the head and he sees his gun, sees it's a better gun and goes, ooh, upgrade.
And then just tosses his shitty pistol, which made me wonder, like, okay, if a guest is shot by a host, and I'll make this quick. If a guest is shot by a host and it gives you a bruise.
Yeah.
But then you grab a host's gun as a guest and you use it against the, you know, I thought the construction of these weapons was different for host versus guest.
The bullets, I believe, are designed to go through hosts, but can't go through, like, maybe hosts are made a little more.
Different kind of material, skin. Like, yeah. Like, okay. I just needed some kind of explanation to that.
That's how I've, again, we don't know. But that's how I kind of rationalized it.
Yeah. Then we bounce back over to the Men in Black. He and Lawrence are going after Wyatt, and they find Teddy tied to a tree, like bleeding out.
Mm-hmm. He asks to be mercy killed.
It appears to be where we last saw Teddy in action was being captured by these crazy masked gang, I don't know what it was, but this appears to be the result of that, right? Is that what you took it as?
Yeah.
Okay. They're discovering him after that. Then we bounce back over to William, because why not? And Logan murders the man who was guiding them.
Love this move. Because Slim Miller tells the group that someone named El Lazo will pay twice as much for him as they would get for the bounty. It's all Logan needed to hear.
Logan's El Lazo.
Just like, oh, okay, I'll just blow Holden's brains out. William freaks out, and then Logan's like, no, dude, it's okay. You actually found an Easter egg that'll get us to the best ride in the park.
Now, this is the part where I really started to get annoyed with the differences between William and Logan's outlook.
Yes.
Why does William care so much that Logan blasted this meaningless, worthless host that is taking them on this dumbass bounty? Why? He's like, what are you doing? It's like, dude, what do you mean, what are you doing? You can do whatever you want. It does not matter at all.
Yeah, William needs to understand already. It is frustrating how William does not seem to be adapting to Westworld.
He's such a pussy.
He is. He really is.
But yes, Logan says, your bullshit mission led us right to an Easter egg, this El Lazo situation, a ticket to the best ride in the park.
So then this causes an argument with William. Dolores steps in and says, no, like, you're not going to be leading us. So he points his gun at Dolores, which causes William to point his gun at Slim. And then we have a double prisoner situation, which I love that Logan comments that they both have a travel companion now.
He won't even fuck his.
I won't fuck mine either.
Yeah.
Just another slight jab at William.
Yeah, then Logan begs William, look, like he says, go Black Hat with me. Come on, you got to save the girl. Now give me a little something.
Yep. This whole scene exemplifies why Logan is my favorite character, because he's not my favorite person. He's a bad person. My favorite character. Did you ever watch The Inbetweeners?
Can you even say he's a bad person?
I don't know. It's true. We can't say
this
that.
Is,
no, we can't.
Or is this what the place was meant for? It you is. Know what I mean?
It is.
Who's to say a good guy wouldn't roll into Westworld and act exactly true. Like Logan?
Did you watch The Inbetweeners?
I did not. I don't know what that is.
Well, the listeners who watched The Inbetweeners, the British one, not the American one. The American one sucked. Jay in The Inbetweeners is this... He's amazing because he's an over-the-top, terrible like person. He just very raunchy. All he makes are sex jokes and talks about how much sex he has. But like, it's still realistic. It's not a caricature in the sense that like I look at Logan and go, nobody would act like this. I can see how there would be a human who would act like Logan, and that's why I enjoy him so
much. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I know a lot of people who would act like Logan.
It's great.
Yeah.
William still doesn't understand this is all a game. Clearly, he's been a huge loser.
He is, but they're going to Pariah, which sounds tight as hell, and I look forward to seeing it.
Well, Logan left with Slim for Pariah. William and Dolores were not with him.
Wait, for real?
We didn't see it. All we saw was Logan go, which way to Pariah? Him and Slim walking away on horses, and we don't see Logan and Dolores with them.
Oh, I just assumed they were together.
I assume they split up because we don't see them. It's a pretty wide shot, and we didn't see them together.
Huh. Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I saw. I didn't see. It was just Slim and Logan.
Yeah, you're right. We only see them riding away, but I just assumed that for whatever reason, he had chosen the company of Slim to drink with, and William was probably 20 yards back being a pussy with Dolores. That's what I took
could
it
be,
as. But, yeah.
But it didn't look like it. Cut back to Mesa Hub. We see the Hector safe heist from episode one begin to go down from the control center.
Yes.
Not the same one, but that same kind of narrative loop.
Yes, where he robs Mariposa. No, it's the same one. I mean, we're not watching the same thing again, but it's that
same
part
exact
of the narrative.
One.
And there are two guests riding with him this time, which is tight. Good for them.
Yep.
Seems like a fun one.
It all goes as it normally does until Maeve holds a gun to Hector's head instead of engaging in banter with him that she did before.
Yeah, she kind of flanks him from the corner. Yep. As we said earlier, as I jumped way too far ahead for, she's ready for him. She is prepared for this moment. She takes him into the safe room, says she wants to talk. She's going to give him the combination to the safe in exchange for some answers.
Yes.
That's when she shows him the drawing.
Mm-hmm.
The shade, as he refers to it as, which I don't know why that's what he calls it. But
yep. And we learn that this narrative loop is different because there are some guest families that are heading into Sweetwater, and A-Team Ashley Stubbs doesn't want these families to see too bad a scene when they get in because
right.
he thinks they'll be traumatized. So he's like, cut the heist short and arrest Hector's whole squad.
Yeah, but the fucked up thing is the guests that are riding with Hector, they get their guns jammed and are thrown in jail for the evening until one of the girls from the Mariposa is going to sneak them in a key and some cake or some shit.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but if I'm paying $40,000, fuck that.
You're not throwing me in fucking jail.
I don't think so, bro.
Remember we talked about how it was like a shit ton of money a minute?
Yes.
Think about how many minutes for a whole evening. It was still daylight.
This is a very interesting move by Ashley Stubbs It just shows us the level of control that he even will exert over the park if he feels it to be necessary. It just, so many moving parts. I'm just going to shut up.
I didn't like that Ashley did that.
Yeah, it really pissed me off.
That was annoying. At least like let them escape town and like head out there.
Yeah. But to jump back to Hector and Maeve, he explains that he says a lot of crazy things here.
Yeah.
One of which is he says something about the man who walks between worlds. They were sent from hell to oversee our world.
Yes.
The Dreamwalker said there were some who could see them. That's a blessing. That it's a blessing from God to see the masters who pull your strings.
It seems weird how much of a parallel the programmers actually gave the Shades compared to real life.
So, I don't think most people probably take. Maybe I'm just an idiot, but I didn't even draw that. Like, I don't even jump to that in my mind. Like, how would he have these lines? How would the person who told him the lines have the lines? So are you under the impression that the programmers, the people who write the Westworld storylines and narratives, like the Lee Westworlds of the world, the Dr. Fords of the world, that they put all this into the story? And that's why guys like Hector have this information? Or is what is the deal
yes.
here? What is this shit coming from?
I am under the impression that as an Easter egg, they put the whole spacesuit men shade thing into Native American lore as a means of just imparting a little bit of a hidden kind of thing into the park.
Okay.
That is based in reality. but gotcha. That the host could never understand until shit goes crazy and they start having memories and thoughts they shouldn't be having.
Got
could
it.
Be wrong.
Okay.
And then, so yeah, Hector says all this stuff. Maeve explains how she was shot and the Shade had cured her wound, but she heard that, you know, there was still a bullet fragment left inside her. So she wants Hector to cut her to see if there's any evidence she was shot. Hector, Maeve cuts herself because Hector refuses to do it.
Yeah.
He won't like hurt a defenseless woman. He reaches into Maeve, pulls out the bullet fragment that Maeve was shot with. Maeve comes to the realization of what's happening. And that
she's, yeah, the whole, the takeaway for her is that she's not crazy. And quote, and that none of this matters.
And then they get John Dillinger style, just peppered with bullets through the door. And
while they make out.
While they make out, and it ends.
And this is important because Maeve has, like you said, come to the realization that she can die in this world and it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
She'll just get brought right back to life. Now, why Hector is okay with going along with that, I'm not sure, but he's kind of a nutty dude.
Yep.
Whatever. He got talked into it. And that's how the episode ends. It's fucking crazy.
Yep. So there you go. I hope you enjoyed our episode 4 recap. Tweet at us, DM us, leave comments. We will respond to you. I am at Jared Borislow on everything. He is at WR Bolin on everything. For the podcast, we are at Freeze All Motor on Twitter, at Freeze All Motor Functions on Instagram. As anyone who's interacted with us so far will tell you, we will get back to you in some way. We want this to be an engaging and interactive podcast experience for you.
So oh, yeah.
We're here to engage you, to get engaged to you. I'll get on one knee.
Stay one episode a week, baby. You can do it. I know it's hard. I wanted to watch episode 5 yep. pretty badly after this one ended, but stick with us. We're having fun. It's much better this way. Jared, give us the NPR-style sign-off.
Freeze All Motor Functions is brought to you by Grand X Media and hosted by me, Jared Borislow, along with Ross Bolin. Producer Michael Wiener produced the show. Special thanks to intern Garrett, who helped us format and prepare the show, and intern Serena, who does insanely awesome Westworld-themed Photoshop work for us that you can check out on our Twitter, at FreezeAllMotor, and Instagram, at FreezeAllMotorFunctions. Call into our hotline, 888-6-FREEZE. It's a new number. We love it. We hope you do, too. This episode is dedicated to whoever makes us intro-outro music.
Ooh.
If you are good at music making, we would love to see the music that you make and think that will be good for our intro outro. Maybe we'll use it. And if we do, we'll shout you out.
We know one of y'all is a beautiful artist. Get it done.
Please. That's it for this week. Bye-bye.